This is Restless. Welcome back to Restless, a show that is a post-mortem on the young, restless, and reformed. And we are going to do a post-mortem thing on the young, restless, and reformed. I am your host, Matt. I am joined by Pastor Michael. Pastor Michael, how are you doing?
We're doing well. You know, we were always going to come back to it, everybody. Yes, this is a post-mortem on the young, restless, reformed. We should have chose Haunted Cosmos, but we didn't. And we decided to go down this rabbit hole instead, and now we do not make the Patreon dollars that those guys do.
Yeah, we don't. You can sign up, though, for $3 for our Patreon if you want us to do our best Haunted Cosmos impression, where we talk about ghosts, and I tell a brief story about why I was scared to death just before we recorded this. So, great story.
It's not as good as you think. It's very fun. Don't get me wrong. But it doesn't have to do with ghosts is all I'm saying. It's not as exciting and haunted cosmosy.
No, it has nothing to do with that. But Pastor Michael, today we are doing something I have talked a lot about. We are going to discuss the origin story of TGC. And now I should say, we are actually doing the origin story of TGC as TGC presents it. This is what TGC's self-understanding of their beginning is. And so that's probably important, because there's probably a lot of different ways we could go about explaining this. But these are from documents and sermons, and we may end up doing this in two parts. One,
I can't imagine we get through it all in one, but maybe I'm wrong.
So we will focus on one. I think there are two main things we want to do. We want to do something on what Colin Hansen believes was the, like, what we might call the theological impetus, which is a talk from D.A. Carson, which we will discuss. We'll only play two clips, and we'll explain why we're not doing a ton of clips on it as we do it. And then what we will do is we will walk through the preamble documents. So I didn't even know these existed, and they're still widely published with a video introduction from Tim Keller. They were meant to be any pastor or church stumbling on to the TGC. And it's like, before you read our statement of faith and these things, listen to our preamble as we discuss, like, who we are and what we've come from. And I think you'll find both of these ways of introduction are very interesting. Now, Pastor Michael, should we just get right into this?
Let's do it.
Okay. So let me start with how this talk came to be given, and then we will talk a little bit about it. So there is an article you can find where Colin Hansen traces some of these things. And I'll link it in the show notes. We'll link the audio and video version of this sermon in the show notes. We will also link the ebook they turned it to in the show notes. So all of these things will be linked. You can dive into this. And again, there is a lot more you could look into, but these would be the places to start. So Pastor Michael, before I talk about the talk, tell me about what you think about the title they chose to give the ebook version, which is like a cleaned up transcript version of this talk, that they called it Prophetic from the Center. So what does that, how well do you think that fits the sermon you listen to? And what does that tell you that Colin Hansen says, this is the book that captures what we were trying to do theologically in 2007?
Yeah. So, what's interesting is that I don't think that if you listen to, for instance, the sermon, the original sermon that it's based on, I don't think that you would come up with that title. But it is there a little bit, right? Like it is there because it all begins with D.A. Carson talking about the fragmenting of the world, including the evangelical world, right? Including the church world. And then he goes into what is the gospel, right? So what's at the center of it all? The gospel, right? So it is very briefly there, but it's the kind of thing that if you're not looking for it, it would just pass right by. I don't think you would notice it at all. But I think that probably what happened is over time, that part of the identity became much more central, right? Instead of just, this is what the gospel is, it became much more, oh, this is what it's like to be the guys trying to hold everything together, to be the ones that are kind of making the borders of evangelicalism and taking the center. Mm-hmm. And so that became much more of the story over time. That's how I would think of it anyway.
So what's interesting is what I find very interesting is I do think the original TGC conference in 2007, the national conference, is very important for their self-understanding. Pastor Michael is right. I don't think you would naturally grab this as the title of this talk. In fact, if you're the kind of person that is annoyed by titles like Prophetic from the Center, that you think that sounds kind of annoying, I think, and I would encourage everyone, Pastor Michael, I think this is a great talk. And I think most people...
Oh, it's great. It's phenomenal. Yeah.
Very encouraging.
Yeah, and Carson's great, by the way. D.A. Carson is great as a scholar, as an academic, but also when he preaches and speaks, he's very good, right? For an academic, for a guy who is known for being like not wanting to like interact with people a lot, being a lot more like, I just want to be in my room with a bunch of books, like that style of man, he's an incredibly good communicator.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And so I do commend this to you. I think one thing that would be really helpful for anyone who wants to listen to it, and I think what's also interesting is when I'm listening to this talk, I go, yeah, this is what we all liked about this.
Yes.
In 2007.
Yes.
This is, and when they're like, why do people give us a hard time? Why are they so disappointed? It's because it's like, we all remember this. We all like this.
Everyone because you decided that you would call it Prophetic from the Center. doesn't that just show a little bit of that movement, right? Almost like instead of just, hey, the gospel is at the center, to then call it Prophetic from the Center, almost just, it takes on this air of superiority, like of self-importance.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it was actually as much there early on.
Now, the title of this conference was Tethered to the Center. And here's what's also interesting about that title. This title is the idea of gospel-centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, I believe, where that framing comes from. So they're taught when they say this, and that's why they would then associate his talk, what is the gospel, with what the center is.
Yep.
And let me even, I don't think it's in his talk, but let me give you another quote from one of these really early, whether it's from the conference, what they said gospel-centered was. Now, Pastor Michael, I want you to tell me, how has this changed what gospel-centered means from what it meant?
What year is this, by the way?
2007.
2007, okay.
And then we'll get back to what led up to this 2007 talk. So this is their quote. This is, I don't know, but it's the earliest one basically I can find that starts to talk about center, gospel, centrality, all of that. We wanted to build a community of churches and pastors in which the gospel was the central thing. That was the thing that got us excited, and that is why we got out of bed in the morning. And in Colin Hansen's article, you'll see him quote that, and he'll talk about that's where gospel-centeredness comes from. So, Pastor Michael, how is that different than what ends up getting talked about as being gospel-centered today?
Yeah, so we've talked about it before that it's almost as though to be gospel-centered became gospel-only. Meaning like everything is only about justification. That's it. That's where everything stops. That's what everything's about. That seems to be really where this went, is everything is about you're a sinner in need of the grace of God. Jesus died for your sins. That's it. Every passage of scripture every doctrine of theology, everything is just that, but in different words, mm-hmm. Which just limits it. You know, what's so interesting is that when you listen to D.A. Carson's talk, What is the Gospel? Like you're saying, it's great. And even when he's talking about the reason the gospel has to be at the center, I don't remember him using that language, by the way, at all in this talk.
But he
talks about how, you know, basically there's all these different views on what the gospel is, that people keep going all these different directions with the gospel. Whereas he's like, no, the gospel is what is presented in the different perspectives from the gospel writers, right? And then he walks through what that is, what it says, as it's developed and given to us in scripture. And it's great, right? Even thinking about that idea of being tethered to the gospel fits when you think about this as them seeing all of what was this evangelical movement that had been going on since, you know, Carl F. H. Henry and others, and is now kind of splitting up in all these different directions, right? There's the guys who are all about like the gospel of the kingdom, which means bringing justice. And there's the guys who are about the, you know, whatever. It's all these different branches. This is really, you know, again, this is kind of the different branches that Reform Resurgence talks about.
Yep.
And they see that clearly, very consciously. They notice that. And so they're saying, no, we should, all of us, what makes us evangelical, what makes us this movement, this group of churches, this connection with each other is what? It's that gospel at the center. Mm-hmm. Not the gospel's everything, even a limited gospel, because what D.A. Carson goes through and talks about is pretty expansive, mm-hmm. but it's centered on just that, you know, that piece of what exactly the historic gospel is.
Now, what's also interesting about this, if this sentence kind of defined what being gospel-centered would be, a statement, gospel-centered immigration policy makes no sense. You can't say, I want to build a community in the church where pastors do immigration policy where the gospel is the thing that gets them excited.
Yes.
Right. You've inherently lost, right? When we start saying we slap it onto everything, it was never meant to do that. It was actually meant to say, like, the church is here to be most excited about the gospel, not immigration policy.
Man, and even as you say that, how much then of
gospel-centered movie reviews?
Yeah, exactly. Like how much of this desire to try to keep all of these disparate groups together by the gospel, what it actually did is everybody just took the gospel as an adjective to add on to their thing.
That's right. I think to be gospel-centered in the way that they originally imagined it means you can't use it as an adjective.
Yeah.
You can't use it as an adjective.
That's right. And then it became an adjective. Then it became the gospel coalition, right? Like the coalition actually kind of became the center as opposed to the gospel.
That's right. So so this idea came up when D.A. Carson, and at his time, I didn't realize this, at the time, his relatively unknown friend Tim Keller in 2005 were speaking at a... to a group of evangelical pastors in the UK. And there's I don't have the organization in front of me. They go and speak at this evangelical organization, and they had this kind of realization that this organization doesn't exist in America. Now, I think there is an interesting part about that. That they were like, oh, wow, this thing doesn't exist. Also very interesting to think about Tim Keller not being well-known. Prodigal God comes out in 2008, right? So this is before Tim Keller is a household name in evangelicalism. And they go there and they speak to these evangelicals in Britain. Now, what Americans, most of us, don't understand is that because of the state church in Britain, because of the, like, entrenched way religion is done there, that like inside the Anglican Church there, or sorry, the, you know, whatever, the Church of England there, there's the group of organized, actually believing evangelical pastors who have to organize outside of the church to do so. And so it becomes this kind of like this, you have to have this alternate way to organize because you're all part of the state church technically.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? And so the question they come back with is, why don't we have that here in the US? So Pastor Michael, do you think at the time, the thing they went and saw and wanted to have here, what do you think about that as like one of the things that caused them to send their original invitations to the original Gospel Coalition conference? I mean, original council members.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have seen this at the time, but looking back now, is it then basically not a move to try to help expand the work of the church, but rather a helpful way to manage decline, right? So if you're taking the evangelical church in the UK as your model, especially in 2007, I know we've got great guys over there trying to, you know, plant churches and do their work and doing great work. So I'm not trying to belittle those of you in the UK or those who are doing great work there. But I think that they probably agree that there's like, for a long time, there has been a significant decline in the faith in the UK. And yeah. So to model something after that, I just can't help but think, is that not in a way just a, like that is just a managed decline as opposed to thinking about how do we actually build?
Right. Right. Well, and again, what I think is interesting is, you know, this idea of like, we need cross denomination, cross church things. Well, the barriers that exist in the UK in the church don't exist here. And so what that means is that in their minds, there was something inside of their own communions they could not accomplish. Because in the UK, it's obvious what they can't accomplish. I can't have fellowship with regenerate pastors just if I show up at the diocese. Yeah, that's bad, right? We should do something about that. I mean, in the PCA, in the Free Church, what is it you can't do inside those communions, or the Southern Baptist Convention obviously becomes large. What is it you can't do in those communions that we require? Now, maybe it's, again, this is our chance to reinvigorate all of these or whatever.
Yep. And it does seem, again, because of the noticing of the fragmenting of society and then the fragmenting of the church coinciding to it, there was this desire to try to keep that together in some regard. And I think probably at least the ideal was, yeah, we are going to like help to spur each of these groups on. We're trying to help. But I just think looking back on it, you see how much more it ended up being a managed decline.
Yeah. And I think, again, right, I think if you understand what they meant as gospel centrality, and in the right on their minds at that point is the emergent church, postmodernism. And these are things we have to not be mad about. That is what D.A. Carson's entire career was faced beating his head against the wall in academia for. Like that's what he faced in the academy in his lifetime. So it wasn't like a fake threat that he was responding to. And so I do think the idea could be that maybe together, since this is a war that will come to all of us, if we want to say Jesus really rose from the dead, it really means everything. That's really what the church is here to say. That is a conflict that whether you're a PCA pastor, you're in the Free Church, right? You're a Baptist pastor, like that you would have to be engaged in. So they gather together in 2005 for the original council meeting, which we'll come back to next week, which is what kind of sets the stage for the preamble. So then they form the conference. They give this talk. And again, Pastor Michael, we are not going to review a lot of this talk. Not only are we running out of time, but two, I mean, like, I'm happy to play gospel preaching on this podcast, but really that's what I would be doing. And you should just go listen to the talk.
Yeah, it's great. I highly recommend it. Yes. It's very good.
Now, I actually think one of the most helpful things about it is, so the talk is structured around 1 Corinthians, what is it, 1 through 8 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. The time where Paul defines what is of first importance to him, and he walks through the gospel, both doctrinally, you know, that he appeared to all of us. And Carson works through those in a, you know, in a very, like, academic-y, conference-speaking way. I have 5 theological things, you know, like, 4 qualifiers, you know, like, he does it that way, but it's great.
It is very good.
I think one thing that would be really helpful to you if you're just out there is listen to this talk, because I think as a Christian today, especially if you're in any form of ministry, you need to be able to basically be ready to extemporaneously speak on this passage, talk about this passage.
Yep. And I don't know if you say it's 1 Corinthians 15.
Oh, did I
make what he's working through, right?
Maybe I misspoke. I thought I said that, but yeah, 1 Corinthians 15, like the first 10 verses of the chapter.
Yep.
And I think you should be able to, basically every believer should be ready to talk about this or lead someone through it, asking them questions, because this is, I think, one of the key ways people should learn to share the gospel. Wow. Do you want to know what the Apostle Paul said was the most important thing? Read this. Talk yep. through what it means. And I think Carson will give you tremendous help in understanding what's there.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it. The only things I want to listen to before we close out here with our first part, we'll come to the theological part, and then we'll get to the organizational part in the next one. We'll go through some of the preamble documents, the first council meeting. But I want to listen to one, the section where he actually mentions what it means to be prophetic from the center. And then the second one, where he kind of describes what are the terms on which we hope to succeed in as this coalition. So let me share my screen so Pastor Michael and I can see this, and then we will play the clip. These are both 1-minute clips, everybody, so we will not be here long with them.
All that I teach them. I've resigned myself to that for a long time. They are most likely to learn what I'm excited about. If the gospel is merely assumed, while relatively peripheral issues ignite our passion, we will train a new generation to downplay the gospel and focus zeal on the periphery. It is easy to sound prophetic from the margins. What is urgently needed is to be prophetic from the center. What is to be feared, in the famous words of T.S. Eliot, is that the center does not hold. Moreover, if in fact we do focus on the gospel and understand it aright, we shall soon see how this gospel, rightly understood, directs us how to think about and what to do about a vast array of other kinds of issues. Now, there are many biblical texts and themes we could use.
So, Pastor Michael, this is where he uses the term prophetic from the center.
It's great. It's great. I like now all of the things I said bad about it. I'm like, well, it was great when he said it.
Because I think that what we might call the myth making of what that means, I think, like the term gospel centered, I think it's likely changed.
Hmm.
Right. Because his general point is this. It's really easy if you take some kind of extreme point of view on any subject, and then to like call out everyone for failing to hit that subject the way you do, to be like, I'm the prophetic voice of a generation. You know, our friend Mark Driscoll has found a way to do that by getting in a disagreement with a guy. Like, right? It's not hard to end up sounding prophetic. D.A. Carson's saying, I actually think it's a good challenge. You have to actually be prophetic. It is your duty, as he's speaking to pastors primarily, to be prophetic, and you have to find a way to do that through gospel preaching.
Yep.
That's actually a worthy challenge.
Yes. Yeah. And well, right. And what is the center? You are not the center.
Right.
You are not the one that's like making the center, or like you're being prophetic from the center. What it is just the gospel, because it is the central piece, the foundational piece of everything that you do, is what is prophetic, right? Like that's what, because you can think that you are prophetic and your ideas are prophetic, your ideas about, you know, the movement of culture, which has become all important to almost every pastor, right? Like that's the center. That's everything that I want to talk about, is my issues in the culture. And I get that impulse. So I'm not just, you know, bashing others, but what do we make fun of the Gospel Coalition for a lot? It's become that, right? The gospel in a Taylor Swift concert, right? It's that sort of thing. Well, what that tells me is you thought that you were the center and your ideas were the center, and these peripheral things that he's talking about, which is all that you care about, that you thought that's what was at the center. But to be prophetic from the center, he's really just saying, preach the gospel. That's what matters.
Because the preface is, I'm worried you'll assume the gospel.
Yes.
Like that, like, but because he's like, all my students know I teach the gospel. They forget lots of what I tell them, but most of them actually remember what I'm excited about. And TGC, I think this is what everyone's saying.
Yeah.
It's not that I can't still find articles about justification by faith or like reasonable things there, but everyone's experience with you is you seem to be pretty excited about other things.
Hmm. Well, and even can we say that to limit, which does seem like what's happened a lot in the gospel center movement, to limit the teaching of scripture and the work of Christ to one facet of the gospel, like justification by faith, is to actually miss, again, what D.A. Carson is saying, what he does. I mean, he shows how the gospel is actually, in a way, all-encompassing, but not in the way that it's been used, right? This is where, so in this talk, by the way, he goes on, he says, you know, the gospel is Christological, it is theological, it is biblical, it is apostolic, it is historical, it is personal, it is universal, and it is eschatological, right? Like he says, like that, like the gospel is so
that's
much bigger, right? As we think about what the four authors of the gospels taught, the story of Christ, the message of Christ, the person and work of Jesus Christ is so much bigger and all-encompassing than just what it was limited to. And once you get this, you know, kind of deeper view of things, you start to understand how that can actually impact every other line of thinking, right? Or at least how it can be the foundation, the starting point of everything else, of all these other concerns. But the way that it became this cheap adjective to add on to what you really care about seems like, you know, it's so funny, even as we talk about it, I keep thinking, man, you're right. This is why we loved this so much. Right, this is what drew us to this so much, that it was so good to hear and so refreshing to hear in the midst of the seeker sensitive movement and in the midst of the emergent church movement. That's where we were. And then D.A. Carson comes and says, look how rich and deep and beautiful and fulfilling and huge the gospel is. But he actually did it through actually preaching the gospel. And now take, you know, any TGC article that we've talked about a million times, the gospel in this, the gospel in the Barbie movie, what, you know, this is what it's become. And it's really sad. It's really sad to see that.
All right, let's watch this second clip and we'll see if I picked out another one that will be helpful to understanding kind of what about this, what kind of table it was trying to set.
There is a kind of traditionalism that loses its way and that preserves form while sacrificing authenticity and power. In Corinth, however, that doesn't seem to have been the problem. Corinth speaks rather to the lust for endless innovation that casually cuts a swath away from the practices and beliefs of other churches, while quietly sidestepping the careful instruction of the apostle. Paul insists that the gospel is rightly asserted to be the central confession of the whole church. Always be suspicious of churches that proudly flaunt how different they are from what has gone before. Number five, the gospel is boldly.
So I just thought that was, again, an interesting statement about what kind of, what he's like, what the church needs to be. I mean, we're in the Midwest, so mega churches still do this. But I think in most of the rest of the country, the I'm not your grandma's church, I think that, like, as an attractive idea is kind of dead. But again, I just find it, this the need for innovation, this need to cover new ground, I think as a problem is an interesting statement. Hmm. Yeah, any thoughts on this clip?
No, here's an academic with a suit and tie saying, you know, the real problem, it can be true that you can have a dead traditionalism that destroys authentic faith, but that's not the problem in Corinth. And he just, I mean, by assumption, right? Implicitly, he's saying that's not the problem that we have.
Yeah.
Now, put D.A. Carson, and then who could we think of as maybe a more like current kind of picture of the Gospel Coalition type of communicator? Maybe like a Matt Chandler, like a J.D. Greer, right? So you imagine, here's this guy, you know, in suit and tie, talking about being careful not to just be endlessly innovative. And you've got, hey, this guy that wears a t-shirt and walks around yelling at people or trying to talk about the cultural issues of the day, has Beyonce songs playing at his church. That's J.D. Greer. I don't know if right. Matt Chandler's church has ever done that, but like, that's who I think of anyway when I think of the Gospel Coalition now. I don't think of D.A. Carson, Tim Keller, with, you know, whatever criticisms you might have, and we've had, that he was a different kind of guy, right? He was not that endlessly innovative kind of guy in the same way. You think about a John Piper, these figures, the next generation of the Gospel Coalition really was not in that same vein, I don't think.
This has been part one of the TGC's origin story. Stay tuned for when we do part two. We also, in these next few weeks, have to do Jesus's ascension and Pentecost in our walking through the Apostles' Creed, because it's that time of year. So please subscribe to this show, join us, do all the things good people do for podcasts they like, and do it for this one. Thank you.